Welcome to episode 1 of The Gods We Belong To, an urban fantasy noir podcast. The Gods We Belong To tells one continuous story in order, so it's important to start at the beginning, which is where you are. So, lucky you. Now, take a beat, take a breath, and say hello to Alex. Chapter 1. The first blow is nothing. A clumsy gut punch. This jackass telegraphs his moves a mile ahead, so I have plenty of time to brace for it, tighten up for impact. But the second one catches me off guard, connects with my jaw, and makes me see stars for a second. Stupid. A rookie mistake. He smiles the witless smile of the foolishly confident, certain he's put me in my lowly place. I smile back, spit blood in his face, and laugh. One punch? That's not pain. Real pain is having your eye torn out and then watching it burn with the one terror-widened orb you've got left. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Point is, when you've lived the kind of life I have, there's just nothing scary about an angry, overweight, middle-aged adulterer. But Alan here doesn't know any of that. All he knows is that he just got caught on camera sticking it to his secretary, and I'm the one that caught him. My bloody grin throws him for just long enough for one strong, swift kick to the groin. He goes wide-eyed, lets out a sound like a deflating balloon, then takes an involuntary knee. One good left to the jaw and he hits the floor, hard. Fighting dirty? Damn right. I'd love to keep going, really, I would, but I'm in no mood to explain all this to the cops, even if he did throw the first punch. I've got enough juicy shots of this douchebag and his chippy in action to make his wife a very happy, very rich woman. And that means a nice little payday for yours truly. All in a day's work. Safe work, relatively speaking. Exactly the kind of lucrative snoozer case I was hoping for when I retreated to San Diego a few months back. Things in Los Angeles were just too much. Too much loss. Too many angels. My name's Alex Cassander, and you wouldn't believe my story if I told you. But I'm gonna tell you anyway. No one sets out to have my life. It's the kind of thing you stumble into, and I stumble like a pro. My current gig, the freelance detective thing, that started about 5 years ago. I was 30, one of a million broke-ass musicians failing their way around L.A. After 10 years of shit gigs in shit clubs with unreliable, dumb shit bandmates, I'd finally had enough. My dreams of being a guitar hero were a distant memory, more like a bad joke, and my list of job skills was, well, lacking. So how does a basically unemployable, frequently stoned misanthrope make a living? Office jobs were out of the question, and I didn't do much better at retail. Never mind my total lack of experience, I had a problem with authority and a chip on my shoulder a mile wide that pretty well guaranteed my prompt dismissal from even the lowliest gig. In short, I was fucked. Out of ideas and out of options. Detective work? Why the fuck not? I sure as hell wasn't licensed, so I started small and a little under the radar. I advertised on Craigslist, offered to take on any case. I got responses that ran the range from tame to terrifying. But I got responses. I also got results. Turns out I had a knack for the work, the right kind of eyes for seeing subtle connections, how things fit together. Those instincts, along with the talent for creative fabrication, otherwise known as lying, made me a natural. I followed spouses and business partners, dug up dirt, found lost loves. I also dealt with folks who were a little more off the beaten path. If the local biker gang misplaced some merchandise, or a group of working girls wanted to track down the guy who jumped their friend, Somehow it always seemed to land at my door. After a few years, the weird shit was pretty much my bread and butter, and I was doing all right. Say what you will about my customers, they always paid on time. It was pretty cozy for a while, being the go-to guy for the unusual. But that was before the case that changed everything. The one that introduced me to the very, very deep end. He told me his name was Asa. We spoke very briefly by phone. He offered no details, preferring to meet face to face. I was sitting in my usual booth at my usual place, Phoenix Garden, a small Szechuan joint nestled snugly into a particularly non-round-eye corner of the San Gabriel Valley. I met most of my clients there, unless they preferred somewhere more west side. Mainly I liked the food, which was spicy as hell, but it didn't hurt that most of the staff spoke little to no English. Discretion by default. It was also a few short blocks from my apartment. Living in a neighborhood where I was a minority made me feel kind of invisible, and I liked that. I was just tucking into a plate of lamb with pickled peppers when I saw him walk in. He wore a long gray coat and a wide-brimmed hat, bearded, brown with a frosting of gray. I would have guessed him around 50, and I would have been way off. Immediately, I felt all kinds of agitated. If I'd had the brains to follow my instincts, I probably would have walked right then and there, end of story. Sometimes I wished to hell I had and kept right on living the blissfully ignorant sweet life, blinders comfortably in place. But I shined it on. The stranger made a beeline right for my table, sat down silently, and then smiled ever so slightly. "You must be Alex." His voice was cool and dry, like fallen leaves underfoot, but somehow forceful, powerful. I would have congratulated him on his deduction if I weren't the only white guy in the place. I would have had some sort of wise-ass comeback, but the look in his eye made me think twice. I, singular. Long gray-brown hair fell over his face, swept to cover most of the right side. His left eye was a strange blue-green with flecks of gold in it, and it was fixed on me. "You got me," I said with a bit of a laugh, trying to lighten the mood. "Maybe you should be the detective here." His smile widened just a bit. "No, Mr. Cassander. We each have our role to play, and that precious part is yours. Searcher for lost things, excavator of hidden truths. This is who you are, is it not?" I shifted uneasily in my seat, suddenly short on appetite. "Sure, like you said, but you called me, so you already knew all that. How about you tell me what I can do for you?" "Very well, straight to business. I can respect that, Mr. Cassander." He sat back a bit. I took a breath. "I need you to find something. Actually, two somethings which were stolen from me. Two birds, my beloved pet ravens. It's been almost a week since they disappeared, and I am quite lost without them. I can scarcely think straight, and I find I am becoming forgetful." Okay, not what I was expecting. It certainly wasn't the first pet recovery case I'd had. Hell, I once tracked down a missing Bengal tiger for a prominent pornographer in Van Nuys, so two birds sounded like a walk in the park. "Okay, Mr. Asa. Ravens it is. What can you tell me about these birds?"
"Please, Mr. Cassander. Just Asa. And I think I can save you some time. There are two associates of mine, longtime employees, who I value but do not altogether trust. Their names are Hugin and Munin. Brothers, as it happens. They are the bird's keepers, and it seems they have behaved most irresponsibly. Find them, and you'll find the ravens."
"Hugin and Munin," I repeated. The names felt familiar, but I couldn't place it. "What are they, German?"
"Close enough. I doubt they've gone far. They're not that ambitious. probably just in need of some shore leave. I do ask quite a bit of them, my pets.
Wait, I interrupted. Are we talking about the brothers or the birds?
Yes.
Right. Okay, then.
I dealt with weirdos galore on the job. Sometimes you gotta ignore the flights of crazy and try to focus on the real.
Real. Now there's a word that just doesn't mean what it used to.
I tried to keep him on point.
Let's talk details. What can you tell me about these two? Habits, favorite spots, anything you can think of?
As I polished off my dinner, Asa filled me in on his wayward employees, their usual hangs and habits. It wasn't a flood of information, but it was enough to get me started. So I haunted their haunts, sussed out their connections, scratched for any hint or clue. It was slow going, and I gotta admit, I was way more interested in my mysterious employer than his lost birds. There was just something about the guy, something I couldn't put my finger on. Dark, cryptic, and maybe a little scary. I tried looking him up, but all searching Asa got me was a list of acronyms and the knowledge that Asa was a name used in cultures from Africa to Scandinavia. Not much to go on, really. Then I tried searching the brothers' names. Hugin and Munin. Bingo. I knew them from somewhere. Ravens, right out of Norse mythology, and pets of the one-eyed Allfather, nonetheless. I knew a bit about that stuff, or at least I used to. I loved mythology as a kid. Greek, Norse, Celtic, Egyptian, I read it all. Still, it had been a long time, so I did some quick skimming to catch myself up. I was mid-skim when one word caught my eye. Asa. Apparently, it referred to the Norse tribe of gods, the Æsir, the family to which said Allfather, a.k.a. Odin, belonged. Okay, so my mysterious employer had a penchant for myth, a love of the grandiose, and a thing for mystical names, not to mention looking like an extra from Lord of the Rings. But remember, I was no stranger to the stranger inhabitants of Hollywood, so while the man's mythological pretensions may have been a little wacky, he was far from the weirdest or creepiest client I'd ever had. Actually, despite all the crazy, I kinda liked the guy. So I did my best to do my job, sniffing down all the trails he'd suggested and plenty more besides. I scoured the city, but still came up dry. Until one night, after about 2 weeks of digging, my persistence finally paid off. I was staking out a particularly off-the-map bar, one of those back-alley kinds of places that you had to know about to know about. I was on my third Jameson's, just drinking to fit in, of course, when in walked two guys who most definitely fit the description I'd gotten from Asa. They wore black trench coats and black jeans, even had jet black hair. And they acted funny. Their heads moved in quick jerks and cocked at strange angles. Asa had been very specific. Observe and report only. Do not engage. He wanted to know the instant I spotted them. Fine by me. Let him deal with these two overgrown Hot Topic rejects. I finished my drink, stepped nonchalantly out into the alley, and made the call.
Asa? Sorry. I think I found them.
Good, he said, and hung up.
Strange, I thought. I didn't even tell him where I was. I was about to head back into the bar when I heard his voice again, only this time it was coming from the shadows behind me.
Mr. Cassander, I take it they are in there.
I turned to see him step out of the darkness.
Let's go in and say hello.
He pulled his gray coat tight around him and opened the bar's front door. I followed a few steps behind, still trying to figure out what the hell had just happened. As soon as we were inside, the place went silent. Now, I don't mean that our entrance made an impression and folks stopped talking to take a look. I mean silence. Not a sound.
which seemed odd for a bar that had been thick with the sounds of conversation and moody trip-hop just a minute ago. Then I noticed the people. They weren't just silent, they were stone still, like statues. Only the Trenchcoat twins were still moving. They spun around, saw Asa, and their eyes went wide.
We were gonna come back, stammered the one on the left. Honest, we were. Just a little time off, like a vacation. It's been so long since we had a vacation.
The other chimed in.
Please, sir. We meant no harm. We're just stretching our wings, if you will. We're ready to come back now.
Of course you are, my pets, my little prodigal sons. You know your place and your purpose. See that you don't forget again.
Asa opened his long coat and began mumbling strange words in a language I had never heard. The dark siblings twitched and then changed. With what sounded like a great flapping of wings, their forms convulsed, compacted, and in an instant they were gone, replaced by two large black ravens perched on the bar.
Hugin, Munin, time to come home.
Asa spoke, and the two birds flew towards him, vanishing in the darkness beneath his coat. He closed it, put his hands in his pockets, let out a deep sigh, and said,
"Much better."
Suddenly the bar sprang back to life, music and all. The only one still frozen in place was me. I stared dumbstruck at Asa, who stared back for a long moment, smiled, and winked at me. At least, I think it was a wink. I couldn't see the other eye.
"Can I buy you a drink, Mr. Cassander?" he offered. I nodded mutely. "Two absinths, if you please," he said to the bartender, and turned back to me. "Still so quiet? You are a detective, after all. I thought you'd have more questions."
I stared at him, unsure where to start, heart pounding, mind reeling, but I'm pretty sure I managed to stutter something like,
"What? Wait, but if then... then that means that you're..."
I took a long, deep breath and asked shakily,
"Odin?"
"Very good, detective. Yes, your kind usually calls me Odin. As for the what, even I don't really know that, and hidden knowledge is my specialty. That's why I like you, Mr. Cassander. You are relentless in your pursuit of hidden things, and that makes you mine, in a manner of speaking. I took notice of you, of your activities, and I thought I should make your acquaintance, so I arranged for us to meet."
You arranged?
You mean the ravens? Indeed. I allowed them to escape, even placed a binding spell on them so they couldn't wander far and take my faculties with them. Hugin and Munin, you see, are thought and memory. They allow me to send my mind far afield when I wish it, but my body is left vulnerable. For all true knowledge, there is a price. Never forget that. I gave my eye for a deeper kind of sight, hung from the world tree as an offering to receive understanding. They called me by many names." The gold flecks in his one eye burned like stoked embers as he spoke. His voice deepened and fell into a pulsing, undulating cadence, almost like a chant. "All-Father, Wanderer, Deceiver, Wise One, Gallows God, Balega, Glapsvida, Valfader, Gapthrosnir." "They made great sacrifices. Men and animals, in my name, and their blood fed the roots of Yggdrasil. Bards composed many songs and stories, tales of me, of my family. Some true, some not, some both and neither. Now those stories have faded into myth, and my kind stays mostly hidden."
It's funny what you can accept.
I mean, you'd have thought there would have been some mental resistance, some indignant refusal to swallow the concentrated shot of holy hogfuck insanity I'd just been served. But all things considered, I took it pretty much in stride. The whiskey probably helped, not to mention the joint I'd smoked on the drive over. I was nicely buzzed already, and the absinthe just threw a warm, fuzzy blanket over everything. Those stories weren't new to me, the ones Asa or Odin mentioned. They were a big part of my childhood. But that was a lifetime ago, and I wasn't much in touch with my inner child anymore. Still, one word did kinda stand out for me. Sacrifices? Yes, he replied. Wisdom requires sacrifice, of one form or another. Those offered up were willing, mostly. It was the greatest of honors to die in tribute to the Raven Lord. Sacrifice has power. No one knows that better than I, who have been both the recipient and the offering itself. Remember what I said, all true knowledge has a price. Sometimes that price is blood. He paused for a moment as he saw my growing expression of fear and let some humor seep back into his face. But I'm scaring you, and that is not my intention. Still, if you and I are to work together, you will have to get used to living on a somewhat higher plane of power, possibility, and risk. I promise you, I will be the least of your worries, if, that is, you're on board. I was stunned. On board with what, exactly? I didn't hear a proposal in all that. He rolled his eye and shook his head. You're the detective, Mr. Cassander. Surely you've become at least peripherally aware that you are being scouted and recruited. There are times when I require a reliable and capable human associate to act on my behalf. Be my man on the street, if you will. Do you understand? Wait a minute. You want me to take on other people like you? Why not just kill me now and get it over with? Hardly, he said with a smile. You'll be my eyes and ears, and occasionally my hands, in places it would be imprudent for me to go. Stopping time in a tiny bar is one thing. Only a few people, most too drunk to notice the slightly seasick feeling they get when they are unpaused. I can't risk that kind of stunt out in the world. Plus, that was really more for your benefit. Just a bit of showmanship to get all that pesky doubt and incredulity out of the way. I pay quite well, but then I ask much. So what do you say, Alex? May I call you Alex? Are you in? If there's one quality that's always been front and center in my nature, it's a willingness, even eagerness, to get myself into strange situations, the kind most decent folk avoid. Hell, that's how I got into this line of work to begin with. So it took me all of 5 seconds to answer, yes. Good. I'm glad to hear that, Alex. But I have questions. A lot of questions. I would hope so. What kind of investigator would you be if you did not? But not now. I do, believe it or not, have concerns in this world other than you, and one of them requires my attention. Think on your questions, Alex, and ask them in the light of a new day. Sure. Fine. New day. Meet me tomorrow at Phoenix Garden. 12 noon. You have nerve, Alex. Mortals do not, as a rule, tell me where to be or when. But very well. Okay, then, if you'll excuse me, I have to go home and pass out now. And with that, I walked out of the bar and closed the book on what I was sure had to be the end-all weirdest day of my life. Not even close, Alex. Not even close.
This has been The Gods We Belong To, Episode 1. The Gods We Belong To is written, performed, edited, and produced by Dan Goldstein. Theme music is I'll Drive by Daniel Birch. Additional episode music, Say It Again, I'm Listening by Daniel Birch. The True Entity of Life by Daniel Birch and Ben Pegley. Depressed Buddhist by Unheard Music Concepts. Pilgrim's Progress by Chad Crouch. And Void's Voice by Ian Sutherland. If you enjoyed this episode, please help spread the word. Tell a friend. Better yet, tell multiple friends. You can even tell an enemy if you want. Post, tweet, shout from an open window. 5-star reviews are particularly helpful and appreciated. However you do it, thank you. You can find the show on Twitter at Gods We Belong To. Episode 2 is coming in just 1 week. So, until then, don't do anything Alex wouldn't do.